morning, and welcome to Temple's Health Radio Show. So happy to have you with us today. This is your co-host, Dr. Rick Klofein. I'm here with Dr. Susan Kolb. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Rick.
So happy to be back on the show. I haven't been on for a little while. Susan and I love our radio show, partly because it's a passion for what we do. We're both physicians. Susan's board certified in plastic and reconstructive surgery. I am in gynecology, and we're both board certified in holistic medicine. So we interview people that fascinate us personally and that fascinate us in terms of practicing our craft. I'm also happy to be here with Susan because it's part of our social time. Yay! I like being on the show with Susan. Today, I'm very excited. I'm doing this show because I saw this book, and I just had to talk to Cindy Dale. Cindy Dale's book, The Subtle Body, An Encyclopedia of Your Energetic Anatomy, is a fantastic piece of work. It is actually the reference work that I will keep in my office to use over and over again. Cindy Dale is a worldwide authority on subtle energy anatomy and healing. She's a planetary teacher, educator, and author. She educates through multiple DVD and CD trainings. She's an author of multiple books, including New Chakra Healing, Advanced Chakra Healing, and Susan interviewed her on Temple of Health previously for Illuminating the Afterlife. I consider her a planetary translator, a translator by correlating the various cross-cultural healing and energy systems in a way that's practical, usable, easily understandable, and I think this body of work classifies her as a planetary healer. And in this case, I think that means that we are thinking universally and acting locally on the planetary level. Her encyclopedia, the definition of which in the dictionary is, a work treating the various branches of learning, is just that. It has branches, it's like a tree. The roots are very deep, go very deep into ancient systems. The trunk is a singularity that is strong, and she has a clear view of how each branch has come off the trunk and manifested in so many different ways, and yet all are rooted back into the one. So I'm very happy to have Cindy Dale here with us today. Are you there, Cindy?
I certainly am. I enjoy hearing about my book. It's actually quite exhaustive, and it was exhausting to write, too.
It is encyclopedic. It is a body of work that has, it amazed me as I read it, the amount of information, and yet it's all very clearly accessible.
Thank you. And that was really my goal with it. I'm one of these people that likes to understand what I'm reading, even if it's really advanced and scientific material. And so I'm really writing to myself when I'm putting together these sorts of projects or books, and this one in particular, because I don't have a PhD in quantum physics nor in anatomy. So I literally do have to translate what much more brilliant minds than mine have researched and are asserting, you know, and make it accessible. So I'm really, you know, kind of maybe like most of we authors, writing or speaking to myself.
I want to include, especially in our first half hour, a little bit of overview of subtle energy medicine. I'd like you to feel free to direct the conversation as you feel will most benefit our listening audience. But I'm a little bit first interested about you. Most of the people we interview, and of course, when I look through your bibliography, I found at least a dozen names of people we've interviewed on this show already.
Sure, yeah.
Relative to these topics. And everybody has their own story, but most people that are that this is their life work had a clue, even from some very early age, of subtle energy. How about you?
Well, you know, that's a really good point. I grew up, as many of us did, actually quite intuitive. I was actually more clairvoyant or able to see through the visible into the invisible. And so my daily habits when I was small consisted of looking at the colors around people or noticing how those shapes and hues of energy would shift, say, when my mother was mad or my dad was happy. And I also could see spirits and, you know, ghosts, demons, angels, and, you know, whatever, you know, kind of label I would put on what was invisible. So to me, the subtle world was the normal world. You know, it's not that I wasn't a normal little kid. I played ball and, you know, played dress up and, you know, kind of argued with my sisters. But to me, there were really two realities that I thought were one. And I came to find out as I grew up and started to really speak to kind of the weird stuff, the phenomenon that I was able to perceive, that that wasn't even considered a part of this world, that it was really seen more as, at best, imagination, you know, and at worst, sort of devilry. And, you know, you can't make a gift go away, but you certainly can hide it, put it in the recesses of your mind, which I did when I was a teenager. And I think the teen years aren't really terribly interesting for most of us anyway. And then to my surprise, all these abilities started waking up again when I was in my early 20s. And I pursued. I studied chakras, auric fields. I traveled around the world. Anywhere I went, I tried to connect with, or I just naturally, so-called accidentally, connected with various shamans or healers, you know, or the people who kept their culture alive through their own work, their medicine, their healing, their divination, their truth. And so I started to really, you know, again, understand that these so-called two very different places and ways of being really are one, and they need to be sewn together. And if there's anything that I consider my life work, it's to help people awaken, you know, that knowledge within themselves, to help them very safely and ethically and usefully access those gifts that they have inside that we might call psychic or spiritual or intuitive or healing or other awareness, and understand that, you know, the so-called paranormal includes normal and includes what we say is beyond normal, but we're really full beings and we need to operate fully. The subtle body to me was just a joy to work with, that particular encyclopedia, because I love research. I love studying. I could do nothing but analysis, research, learning day in and day out. So some of these books that I work on are really just an excuse to indulge in, you know, kind of like walking through time and opening up the pages of reality to see what really is underneath. And what's underneath is the subtle world. It's these, you know, dancing molecules and subatomic particles and truths and thought forms and awarenesses that make up who we are. And if we could open them, wow, what a world we would have. What a real world if we each opened to the depths of what we're made of.
I think it's also important to understand that there's a whole generation of children that are knowledgeable about this world from birth, that are coming into, you know, they're growing up now and coming into power. And what's so exciting is that they may have tools that maybe our generation didn't have in order to solve problems that, you know, we've created. And I think Cindy brings out a good point that was true for me as well. Rick, we didn't know that this wasn't seen by everybody. You know, when I knew when someone was going to die, or when I saw ghosts or saw angels, I didn't know that other people didn't see them. I mean, when you're a child, you just assume that your reality is everybody's reality. But what's exciting is you've got a whole generation of children coming up that are incredibly gifted in this area.
We really do, and I'm fortunate that a lot of my clients have birthed some of these children, and I myself have an 11-year-old and a 22-year-old, and I can really see the different characteristics even between mm-hmm. those 10 years. You know, how many of the younger kids come in really fully awakened?
Right.
I kind of have, you know, a little classification in my head, and many of us have heard the term, I think, indigo children,
mm-hmm.
which are roughly the 20 pluses or sometimes 15
right.
pluses, who bridge, you know, kind of this knock-knock real world I think our generation is kind of the pioneers that are trying to undo a few of the institutional bindings, you know. And so the Indigo come along, and they tend to be fairly functional in the real world. My 22-year-old is, anyway, you know, and they have a lot of other awarenesses. And then there's a couple generations, I think, underneath there. I call one the Crystal Kids, and they're super, super sensitive. I mean, maybe sometimes unfortunately so. I think sometimes what we call ADD, which I, of course, have, or autism or some of these so-called learning issues are really just really aware young people and souls that may not have all the boundaries, the field around them to sort. But then there's a set that I call the Crystal Kids that I think they're ready-made. And my youngest, Gabriel, seems to be one of those. I mean, he even appeared to me actually before birth in an angelic form and told me some things that were going to happen. But he just hit the ground running. You know, and I'm actually on my computer writing a book called Gabe Says that I just can't seem to ever wrap up because he looks at me and he's constantly bringing through truth, which is pretty ready-made. You know, it's kind of like those cookies, the only way I bake now, you know, that you cut them out, stick them in the oven, and they come out. It's like, okay, then, I'll just follow him around and know what reality is really like.
And these children have very little tolerance for things that are not true, and they can see through lies like crazy. So the point is, never lie to them, because then they'll lose respect to you, for you. But what will that mean when they grow up, when truth is so important and so clear to them? In other words, you know, you can't lie to them. What kind of society will this create? That's what's exciting.
It is exciting.
And if you lie to them, they know. I mean, you as a mother, you can tell that you can't lie to this child.
No, you can't.
You just can't.
You can't, and they don't lie. I mean, it's like one of my favorite books talks a little about, oh, there's white lies, but there's also purple or pink or green, one needs to know the difference. And, of course, I grew up that way, you know.
Yeah.
A good lady always tells the pink lies, not the black lies.
Yeah,
but,
right.
Oh, no, there's no way Gabe's going to protect himself or anybody else. If he didn't do his homework, he doesn't say the dog ate it, which actually could happen in this house. He says, I didn't do my homework.
Right. Well, it's exciting because the world certainly is in need of what these children bring in. But, you know, there's a theory that I think is an extremely appropriate one to bring forth now. The theory is that we attract to us what we need when we need it, not necessarily what we want, but what we need. And so I think we needed this economic crisis to bring people back down to earth and to expose the, you know, the things that weren't correct. And we need to know in medicine now the information about the subtle body, because our pharmaceutical magic bullets aren't working anymore. We're in a healthcare economic crisis. You see how everything's connected to everything else?
Absolutely. I mean, antibiotics, we know that that's not really the superpower that they once were. Neither is surgery. You know, we're really not curing cancer. We're just kind of moving the statistics around.
We're spending a lot of money.
Alarming rate.
To prolong somebody's life for 6 to 8 months.
And
we're running out of money.
There's
no money to do that anymore.
Exactly. I mean, it's like you're saying, the economic crisis kind of comes down to lying. You know, the values-based securities really didn't have any value. And all of a sudden it's like, wow, look at this mess.
Everything's
and
exposed because it has
perpetuated. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It does need to be. And so our own hearts get exposed.
Right, as long as it's hidden, nothing can be done about it. We just continue to live the lie.
Exactly. Well, and I've been in a part of 12-step programs in philosophy since I was 20, which is decades. And, you know, the core of the approach to addictions and codependency and these kind of more old-fashioned but still applicable words is, you know, you got to get honest. You got to look at something for what it is and see how it affects other people. And I find that a lot of the ancient subtle body principles and systems were very attuned and intuned between person and environment, community and world. You couldn't cut somebody out of their life and figure out what the disease was. You couldn't cut them out of their life and treat the so-called condition or problem. There's a mountain that's very interesting. I cannot pronounce the type of Indians. It's Kualalalala or something. But I want to go there. I have this on my list of must before I die, down in Bolivia. And they live in three different parts of the mountains, the top, the middle, and the bottom. And when somebody has a certain illness, they look at where it is in the body, and if it's around the feet, they may treat that person down at the base of the mountain, because that has to do with grounding, practical, ancestral issues. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's up in the head, they may walk up the mountain and get the healer atop there to look at spiritual issues. Well, and I think that really when I was researching and looking at these various subtle body systems, energy channels, chakras, fields, cosmological overpinnings, underpinnings, it almost comes down to something that simple. We're made of different ways of and types of reality. We have body, we have heart, we have spirit, and all of these interplay. And if we can approach ourselves from that right vantage point and make things right, you know, we have a pretty good chance of maybe not totally curing, you know, but coming to a better sense of wholeness within and outside of ourselves.
It sounds like it doesn't have to be that complicated. That's a very practical, looking at those indigenous peoples the way they do it is a very practical, easy to understand aspect.
I think so. And I'm one who complicates everything. I can complicate dusting because I, you know, don't really like to do it, actually, in the house. But, you know, it's really about this attunement. I have spent some time down in Peru, and I met and worked with and came to honor a particular shaman whose name was Don Francisco, who on his land down in the Amazonian basin grew the Peruvian medicinal plants. There were hundreds of them. And I walked around his farm with him, and I thought, how can you possibly classify and catalog? I mean, I can't even open an herbal manual without just going insane. First, I can't pronounce the words. And second, there's maybe 50 words for absolutely every plant and a dozen to 100 different applications. And so I asked him, well, how do you know what somebody needs? And he goes, well, I listened to the plant. And I thought, oh, and I said, and he said, and when I need to know what the, you know, more, I just listen to the person's body. And then I matched them up. And I put my hand on one of these plants. And I'm not a nature girl. I mean, just to be really organic, you know, maybe granola with Yul Gibbons, but I haven't, you know, kind of really expanded beyond that. And I could sense the plant. And I said, what would my body need? And I got an image of a different plant. And I had this sense of the plant I was communicating with, kind of showing me where I could find it and what corner of this farm. And I mean, there was a network, a matrix of consciousness there. And so I continually strive to live as if that's true. And it's pretty difficult, I think, for many of us because we live in this cacophony of sounds called civilization. And, you know, horns blaring and telephones and email. And there's just way too many ways for all of us to communicate now and get a hold of other people and be gotten a hold of. But there really is a consciousness or a field. I don't know if that's the right word. But the ancients saw and knew that. And they shared, as we can all share and continually update this information and add our own. I mean, we're not static. Each of us is incumbent, whether we're PhDs or authors or homemakers or accountants. I mean, we add to the body of knowledge. That's why we're here.
It's interesting how you make that description of your experience with the plants in Peru. Seems like there's a lot of medicine coming out of Peru that can benefit the planet right now. In the same way that you might have 50 or 100 different friends that you know, and you would know the differences between them, and the way, in who to call on, in what situation, the shaman knows the plants in that same way.
Absolutely. They're their friends. They are. And I think it's amazing how so many doctors, researchers, botanists, and frankly even makeup artists now are going and communicating with these living beings. Aveda is a very well-known salon that's around the world. And Horst, who founded it, actually sent emissaries out into the various indigenous populations to find out which botanicals would help the skin. And you know there's a communication process that we women anyway are constantly looking for to improve some of those considerations. But there is. There's a light. I think many people have said that the medicine is in the disease, but that we've also on this planet been provided, you know, every curative that we need. It's just a matter of opening to it.
And the way that people relate to this field around the world, the way that your teacher in Peru does, we really see this on all parts of the planet. This type of
I think we do.
Yeah.
We absolutely do. I've done a little bit of speaking over in Russia, and one of the women there lived in the Ural Mountains, and she'd attended a few of my classes, and she said that what I was sharing that was at that particular class, more of the Hindu knowledge of the chakras, a bit updated, she said that's exactly what the shaman in our mountains have been teaching. And I did a book signing for a different chakra book, I don't know where, it's some New Age show or something, and an Inuit, an Eskimo medical doctor who knew the ways of her people came up and said, this is exactly what we've been teaching for thousands of years. So I think our underpinnings are similar. I, of course, really also enjoy the differences. You know, because they're in that dance, we can find out and learn different things or different approaches. It's very fascinating. I mean, homeopathic medicine, which you're really, in a way, you're treating with frequency, but you're treating the disease with the disease in a really simplistic way, is very different than allopathic. And allopathic treats the symptoms, but that's important too. If I have a broken bone, I want to still it. I want, you know, it put back together and cemented if need to be. You know, but energy work that's, for instance, practiced by the Aboriginals in Australia or New Zealand can do the same thing. So we're all kind of getting to the same thing in our different ways. And as a intuitive practitioner, an energy practitioner, sometimes for me, the real job is to say, okay, what's the way of framing this for my client that's going to work for him or her? What's their soft spot, their place of enlightenment? What's the way and the eureka, you know, kind of access? Because we're so different. And so we have to give some credence to that too, I think.
You address one issue in your book, since we're talking about the different indigenous energy medicine systems, an issue that we face as modern people that the indigenous people really didn't face, and that's, you termed it, geopathic stress. And these are things, and I know this is something Susan's very interested in as well, things like electromagnetic spectrum pollution.
Yes.
Pollution of our energy fields from radio waves. Pollution,
yeah,
from cell phones, pollution, also ecological pollution from chemicals and things, but particularly the more energetic pollution like the electromagnetic spectrum pollution.
Yes.
These are issues,
yes,
the indigenous cultures really never faced.
They didn't face it, and we have not adapted. Our bodies are biologically very old. I mean, we aren't as beings. These vessels don't know what to do with power, you know, frequencies that don't suit us. And there's been many, many studies, you know, to show that these are cancer-causing, that these sorts of problems and pollutants create heart problems, certainly mental stressors, emotional stressors. I've had clients who just can't work anymore. They have to work out of their home, and they can't work on their computers because they've been so affected and their systems have crashed. And, you know, what really kind of bothers me the most is it's logical that these frequencies are going to potentially harm us. It's just logical. And a simplistic, just mechanical way, our bodies are made out of electricity, magnetism, or electromagnetism, so EMF, or light, and we're impacted and we create mechanical energy such as sound waves. So if we stay super simple, like real world, knock on wood, Newton wouldn't fall off the apple tree, okay? We've got light and sound. And if we're manipulating the light waves and frequencies as well as the sound ones and exposing our bodies to, and animals' bodies in nature, et cetera, to distorted fields or fields that distort our own, you know what? There's going to be problems. So sometimes I kind of go, now, I don't quite get why so-called traditional scientists or medical experts don't get that this is a problem. Because to me it's just, and I'm not, you know, trained, and certainly I don't have a PhD in any of those sorts of mechanics, but I can sit back and see the illogic of thinking that these are healthy frequencies to be putting out there. And, you know, if you go under the surface, there's a lot of research that says, no, this is a really major problem, creating a lot of our so-called modern diseases. And I wouldn't be surprised that some of the fetuses, you know, that their bodies are distorted and creating some of the problems and challenges that are increasing the level of autism or so-called ADHD or some of these things that we now see or are calling so-called epidemics. So, and you know, it's really challenging how to get it under control, too. I think that's almost the bigger question mark.
Of course, when things are not perceptible with our five senses, such as these electromagnetic fields and the pollution that they can create, it's very easy for the average person to just be oblivious.
It is, isn't it? And sometimes there's such simple actions to help ourselves. For instance, you know, just keeping your microwave plugged in or appliances plugged in, you're using most of the electricity, and those so-called not turned on appliances are emanating a field that hurts us.
And
I have one client. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I have one client that she has to sleep in a room completely devoid of everything from plugged in alarm clocks to computers to anything. She just has to, it all has to be in a different corner of the house or she just can't sleep. I think a lot of us are probably like that, but we get so accustomed to being uncomfortable, we think we're comfortable. I mean, it's a little bit like when I'm working with somebody with deep-seated and old, like childhood emotional issues, that they don't even know they're walking around in fear all the time and that they're not breathing until they start to have moments of not fear. And then they get really scared because they realize how scared they are all the time. Well, we're doing that to ourselves, and our kids are growing up like that, which brings us a little bit back full circle, Susan, to what you were talking about. There's these super amazing children, and I do believe there's one brand of these souls that don't have the natural auric field, the protection around them, and more than any of us, they're probably really susceptible to this bombardment. So it's very challenging for them in particular.
On a practical basis, it can be very subtle, too. And as you were saying, any device that we have plugged in that has a little light on is continuing to generate electromagnetic fields, and this can be through the wires and the walls of our bedroom.
Absolutely.
That we can't even see, that are running right by our head.
No. I think there's moments that I can actually feel that energy, to be honest. I've kind of trained myself, especially with like fluorescent lights or some of these not full spectrum sort of emanations. I mean, I would suggest that, you know, sometimes people just try. Just sit in a room that has the typical television, computer, you know, the furnace is on, all that, in Minnesota anyway, it's always on, you know, all this sort of stuff, and breathe, and get in your feet, and feel the core of your spine, sense your skin, and you'll start to feel prickles. And if you really kind of listen, you can hear almost, even if it's just more psychically, these different hums and vibrations that just don't feel right to the body. Most of sound, of course it comes in through the ears, but also our bones. And so some of even the sounds that are emanated from x-rays, microwaves, you know, on the other end, you know, some of the higher sorts of ultraviolet and up frequencies, I mean, those are going into our bones and our genes as well. and creating over time, you know, the conditions to toggle on, I think, some of the genes, the chromosomes, that we don't want to put them on. We just would rather leave those dormant. Cancer, for instance.
So this is a very important issue of us becoming, as individuals, more attuned and aware of the subtle energies in our life, and that as beings in a human body, we have the capacity of recognizing that and knowing when things are resonating properly in a positive way, in a coherent way for us, not only with other individuals, but with things like electromagnetic fields, because we do tend to entrain to the energies around us. And if the energies around us are negative, a negative individual, negative thoughts, or negative electromagnetic fields, we do tend to entrain towards that. So the more aware we can become within ourselves of these energies and perceiving these energies, the safer we can make ourselves.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes people get scared because they go, gosh, if I'm aware of all that dissonance, it's going to drive me crazy because I can't change it. I still have to go to work, and there's 1,000 computers in that great big corporate office. But there's another point with that, in that you're bringing up that word entrainment. There's a lot of research that if we begin to open those positive virtues and qualities in our heart in particular, which is our most potent electromagnetic magnifier, you know, if we start to hold love in there and really get it, like really become it, or faith or truth or healing, that our body then begins to attrain with that, with what's coherent or uplifting. And then our entire system starts to pay more attention to what's good for us in the background, or what they call that kind of background noise. Just naturally it starts to pay more attention to that than what's bad for us. So we can start to shift those inner perceptions, as well as even our cells, the physical cells. So my thought is that over time we can even teach ourselves to flourish in all conditions. Now, that doesn't mean that we've got an excuse to keep on dumping waste and eating and creating and eating artificial additive-based foods, or polluting our environment with you know, these communication devices that we, and frequencies that really aren't any good. We need to keep shifting that, but we do have some personal power in creating a transference and setting up a better way for ourselves to interact with the environment. So it kind of comes down to love. And whatever and however that gets measured, that's kind of the big one ultimately. And if we can come from there, we're certainly going to be healthier than if we're not.
So it sounds to me like what you're saying, one way of protecting ourselves from these external forces is to become more attuned and to open wider the positive heart channels, internal channels within us.
Yes. Yes,
by going inside.
Yes, by going inside and starting there, and then inviting that our actions, I think, be consistent with who we really are on the inside. One of my big bugaboos is that I think we all know, like, what's really true, what's really right. And, you know, most of the dissonance for me anyway that I create within me and around me is when I ignore it or I pretend away that I really know what the right stuff to do is and that I know the right way to think. And so I create all kinds of problems for myself by pretending away my real true knowing. And so I've already got that inside. Sociopathic people, for instance, are those who have just really decided they don't want to know what they really know inside. I'm just your basic neurotic. I mean, you know, I keep working on what I know is in there. And I think that there's a lot of health benefits from continually bringing myself into that core of my own real value system, the truth that I brought in with me, you know, and to keep opening it up. And not shaming myself for not having been necessarily strong enough or willing, you know, enough to do that over time. So the more, for me, I go inside, the more I realize that I haven't really come from that place all the time. But, you know, you got to start somewhere. And so I try to start every day coming from that sort of self-honesty.
And the more time you spend there, or any of us spend there, the more reinforced and open those channels are. And that's true both on the subtle energy level, and it's also true, the body is growing, the evidence is growing very strong. That's true on the neurophysiologic level, too, in terms of when we're experiencing positivity, the neuron channels that allow us to experience that are strengthened. And if we're continually in the negative, and even negative self-talk, that those channels are strengthened.
Yep. You know, I'm thinking of a client I worked with a few years ago. She was, you know, a bit overweight. She worked in a factory, a real hard worker. She came in. She'd just been diagnosed with sarcoma, a very bad cancer in her, I think it was the colon, but I'm not sure. And it was inoperable. And the doctor said, you maybe have 2 to 3 months to live and you should just make peace and, you know, something. And she came in and I said, well, you know, what would you like us to talk about? And she goes, well, she basically said, well, I don't have time to die. I mean, my daughter needs help and, you know, my husband just can't cook for himself. And she basically just talked about her life and all the things she had left to do. And we didn't do any healing work. We didn't look at any inner issues. We did absolutely nothing. She just talked. And she left. And over the couple of years after that, she sent some of these family members in to see me. And they kept saying, oh, Mom's fine. She doesn't go back. She hasn't gone back to the doctor, which I'm not saying, you know, is a positive or negative kind of approach. And, you know, after a couple of years, she came back in and she said, you know, I haven't been feeling well again, and so I wanted to come talk to you. And I said, well, you know, you're still alive. Did you go back in? Did you get tested? Do you still have the cancer? She said, oh, you know, I'm sure I still have the cancer, but I just really don't have time to die. And she said, I figured I'd just come back in and set a few more goals for myself and then go out and work on them. And, you know, 2 years after that, she's still alive. I mean, this is a woman who just, from some place inside of her heart, created what she knew to be loved and is bringing it out in the world, and her body's responding. The cancer didn't go away, but she's still there in her body, and the cancer's just kind of, you know, on the back shelf. So our bodies are really miraculous instruments, especially if we're so-called running our lives with our hearts.
It's interesting when you tell that story, because in that case it sounds to me like the energy medicine work that you did with her was in your sitting, in your conversation, in your holding space for her. And I find this interesting because I feel very much this is the primary way that I do energy medicine with my patients. I'm an osteopathic physician. I do hands-on body work. I do specific energy work. But I'm more and more impressed over the years that I think that the greatest energy work that I do with people is in my sitting with them and in my holding space for them to do their process. And it sounds like that was the work that you were doing with her.
It's just caring. I bet you find that too, Susan.
Yes, I do.
I mean, obviously when we're doing surgery or actually performing in a maneuver, you know, there's a skill base to that, but the energy that we're emanating is going into that person's body.
The other thing I found very interesting about that example that you used is her relationship to her cancer. Conventional allopathic medicine, for as long as it has existed, I think, has felt that the relationship to cancer is one that the cancer has to be gone. It has to be gone, not there. That's the only marker of success. That's the only positive thing that can be. And what you're talking about is moving more in that example. And I think this is growing as well, both in conventional medicine and certainly in integrative medicine, is the cancer may not be gone, but there may be able to be a more of a harmonious relationship that exists between the individual and the cancer in their body. And success may not be total elimination of the cancer, but success might be another 10 good years, even though the cancer still existed.
Yeah, I've been reading even some conventional tracts that are saying just exactly what you're saying, that maybe we can't get rid of it, but so maybe we live with it You know, and that is a very holistic, in fact, spiritual approach that would say, well, you know, how can cancer be my teacher? What can, and I would even say, how do we teach the cancer and vice versa? I mean, there's some interesting research just in cancer that some scientists are starting to differentiate the different kinds, and there's hundreds, thousands of kinds of cancers, but they're noticing that they're quite similar, cancer cells, to fetal cells, and that it's fairly predictive, the severity of the cancer. If they're closest to the first trimester fetal cells, that's much easier to treat, and that cancer, you know, can tend to be eradicated. The latter trimester, you know, that's going to spread. That's much more so-called lethal. The middle sort of trimester and the familiarity to that with the cancer cells, you know, it's kind of a moderate sort of a treatment. And so, you know, I love a lot of the research that so-called traditional medicine, you know, is providing for all the rest of us, like me, armchair me as an armchair medic, you know, and that it's like, wow, so what's unborn? You know, what's this cancer trying to stir up? You know, what can we bring to it that can enable a maturation, a creative process? You know, so the answer seems to be in the disease. If we can knock on the door and invite that condition to talk with us.
I think you're bringing up the distinction that I see as a difference between healing and curing. I've had patients and loved ones who had a cancer and were cured of the cancer, but they were healed of the cancer, but not necessarily sure that they became more whole as individuals.
Yes.
I've had patients and loved ones who were not cured of their cancer. It was a terminal condition and they died, but went through amazing transformation and healing as individuals, even though
exactly.
They died from their cancer.
I think that's very honorable, and it's an honorable way to leave this world. I think I've really been around a lot of the, you know, kind of the integrative process, but even before then, the kind of some of what we call the New Age philosophies, which for me can tend to be a little shaming when it's this idea that you cause everything, and so therefore you should be able to cure it or change it. And, you know, frankly, we're all going to die. I mean, there's one way out of here in terms of the physical aspect of it, and if we can transform through it and reach out and touch others through our own learning and development process, there's no bad disease to have. There's no shameful disease. There's no shameful disease process. There's really just truth and hope that comes out of absolutely anything that we can go through. I mean, if you look at how people are really brought to their calling, their spiritual purpose, their true vocation. I mean, sometimes it comes out of the easy stuff. Usually it comes out of the hard stuff. I think of MADD, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. Well, you know, that organization started because a woman lost her child, which I don't see that there's this God that sits up there and creates these calamities and this horrible chaos to force us to step to the plate or seize our spiritual mission. But I do think that most of the time in the embracing of the challenges, we unlock certain parts of our being that then need to grow, that want to grow, that want to help self and others. And so most people, that's the pursuit that leads to, you know, their true passion too.
One of the other aspects of your book, right at the beginning of the book, that I truly appreciated you addressing was ethical actions among energy practitioners of whatever field they may be in. And I think this is touching base, the whole comments about not self-blaming or blaming someone because of a condition. I feel that that's unethical, actually. And you do spend time in beginning chapters about talking about a proper practice and approaching an individual as a practitioner. And oftentimes, I don't see this addressed in much of the literature that I read, dealing with integrative or alternative healing techniques. And I think it's so important, and I think it may be even more important when you're dealing with energy medicine, because it reaches deep to the core of issues and deep to the core of individuals.
I'm so glad you bring that up. Sounds True, who published the book, was wonderful to work with. They actually gave me no guidelines. They kind of said, just create this encyclopedia. I don't know if they knew that I was quite as kind of as lengthy and exhaustive as a person and a researcher, but I put that chapter in, and it's really almost a way to adapt the ethical codes of standards we find in traditional medicine and drag that, if you would, as if we're working on a computer, you know, over to the integrative or energy medicine practices, because I think it's absolutely vital, whether somebody's a medical doctor, an intuitive hands-on healer, a crystal practitioner, an acupuncturist, that there's a really deep acknowledgement of the ethics involved. And so, again, better people than me can take the little bit that I've started with that in terms of developing a code of ethics and really flesh it out. But I've learned it the hard way. I've been in the business of being an energy medicine intuitive for 5 years probably almost at this point. And I can look back at my career where nobody trained me in ethics. Now, I used to teach ethics to University of Minnesota students. So I actually have a background in business and public policy and ethics and some psychology. So I understand the basics of ethics, but I've seldom seen it dragged over to kind of the non-licensed practitioners at the very least. And it's absolutely imperative. I'll never, in some ways, forgive myself for an experience I went through where I didn't really understand the boomerang effect of energy. Talk about subtle energy. 20 years ago, I was teaching a class, and I'd studied chakras and arc fields and this and that, and I understood that energy can get transferred. So, you know, somebody can actually carry around their parents' cancer or mom's emotions, and it can create energetic and even physical and life blocks within us when we do that. So this woman was saying, you know, I have always felt suicidal. I've tried suicide several times. I go to therapy. I do hands-on healing. Nothing has driven out this suicidal voice. And I said, well, maybe it's not yours. Maybe it's you're owning this for somebody else. And she said, well, who do you think it is? I said, well, go inside and ask. And she said, this is my father's self-inflicted suicidal dream. And I said, well, send that back to him. So she called, she did, a few days later, and to tell me that her father had indeed actually committed suicide within a day or two of our energy event. And for me, that was a horrible, hard wake-up call that said, subtle energy is big energy. It might be little, but it really isn't weak. And I started to heroically, exhaustively learn different techniques whereby we can work with the subtle energies in a way that at least causes no harm to self or others. And so I certainly don't know all those methods, but I keep on trying to learn and apply that lesson, you know, in all areas of what I do, just as a medical doctor does. I mean, you know, it's all across the board. We're made out of energy. I believe that 90%+ of who we are is subtle energy. And, you know, negative thoughts can hurt people. Negative thoughts can kill ourselves or other people when it comes down to it. So it's a pretty daunting job to really know what we're doing with our subtle energy. You know, but it's at least worth, thinking about it and applying a code of ethics as well as we can. So that's the reason that I included that chapter. It comes out of my own, you could say, dissatisfaction, you know, with some of the things I did years back.
Cindy, we're moving into the last few minutes of the show. First, we want to make sure you have an opportunity to give contact information. Would you please do that now?
Absolutely. Cindy is spelled a little funny. It's C-Y-N-D-I. My website's simple after that. It's cindydale.com, cyndidale.com, and that's probably the easiest way to look up who I am and get a phone number and an email, and it's all there on my website.
And, of course, the show is coming from Temple of Health Radio Show, brought to you by Plasticos. That's www.plasticos, with a K, plasticos.com, and also www.templeofhealth.ws. I think we usually end around 5 before the hour. We're moving into that time.
I have some announcements.
Please do.
The radio show next week is A Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe, Travel Tips for the Spiritually Perplexed by Paul Rademacher. It's a great book. I've read most of it. On the 6th of February, Dr. Connie Stapleton, Eat It Up, The Complete Mind-Body-Spirit Guide to Full Life After Weight Loss Surgery. And, you know, at Plasticos, we deal with a lot of patients who have had gastric bypass. On the 13th, Dr. Stephen Martin, Cosmic Conversations, Dialogues on the Nature of the Universe and the Search for Reality. Some light reading there. On the 20th, Dr. Jonathan Ellerby, Your Spiritual Personality, and the Noetic Science for meeting for February is held at the Georgetown Square Dunwoody office. Lawrence Perry, Naturopath, will be speaking on beginning your new chapter in self-development. I also wanted to mention I've got two books out now. One is The Naked Truth About Breast Implants, which also addresses problems with our regulatory agencies for other things like cell phones, GMO, foods, and other diseases that are coming up like Morgellons. And next week we'll have available a book, Goddess Shift, Women Leading for a Change. I have a chapter in that along with Shirley MacLaine, Jane Fonda, Michelle Obama, and Oprah and Jay Rawlings, some of the leaders in the various fields, art, music, entertainment, medicine, politics, I think Olympia Dukakis. So that book will be out for people who want to explore the energy of the goddess.
I'm going to want to interview you on that one, Susan.
Yeah, you will.
This is Temple of Health Radio Show. We've been speaking with author, teacher, educator, translator, planetary healer, Cindy Dale, on her book, The Subtle Body, An Encyclopedia of Your Energetic Anatomy. Thank you so much for being with us today, Cindy.
It was completely my pleasure. Thank you both.
And this is Temple of Health Radio Show, wishing you all joy and health in the new year. Have a great day.